Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Well, first of all, Nancy, thank you for the opportunity to talk with your listeners. You know, this experience is, I'm always energetic and enthusiastic about the work that we do, and having the opportunity to share that is important. And I think, you know, with you, Nancy, you know, kind of leading the discussion was very helpful, because many times I sort of start off on and get off on a tangent, and you help me get back on track and to, you know, make sure I hit the high points of what we're talking about.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy, and we're here for a second conversation as you learn more about the history of how these federal research and development and statewide monies get to the states. The America's Seed Fund is the largest in the United States for places for people to get funding, especially for science and technology in research and development. And there's a wide girth of companies that fit the criteria, and Pat Dillon really helps with navigating the ecosystem, making sure that our taxpayer dollars are invested to support the technology and science innovations in Minnesota companies. So it's just really critical funding. In understanding from our first conversation about Pat's background and how much work goes into keeping these federal and state programs going, and there was a huge, you know, fight with Congress in the 80s because they were all fighting for the same dollars for research and development. And as the work has gone on and more innovations are coming to need support and research and development money in the pool to go to these organizations like this Minnesota Small Business Innovation Research and the Business Technology Transfer Accelerator programs. And every state has programs like this that are really helping entrepreneurs and existing businesses to get the funding that they need so that they can transform their high-risk, high-impact technologies into marketable products and services. And so we're going to continue this conversation to kind of help you with navigating or understanding why it's important for us to watch the legislation that's going through for small businesses and entrepreneurs around technology and science innovation and just any innovation, research, and development in the state, so that we can make sure that each of these programs are getting the funding that they need to support our innovators. So Pat Dillon, just to refresh your memory, she has a MBA and is a treasured innovator in Minnesota science and technology investment and commercialization arena. She's the founder and director of Minnesota's, like I was mentioning, Small Business Innovation Research and the Small Business Technology Transfer Accelerator. And those two programs are used interchangeably, and so we refer to them in our conversation as SBIR/STTR. And these programs help a diverse portfolio of startups and existing small businesses transform their risk. So they're sharing in the development, so they're not taking on all the risk and running out of money. They need money to keep going. So through education and coaching and navigating across 11 federal agencies, Pat and her team help small businesses to apply and secure funding. These programs are referred to as America's Seed Fund, one of the largest sources of early stage capital capital for technology commercialization in the United States. So our taxpayer investments in small, innovative businesses is what have supported the program that Pat is running, SBIR/STTR Accelerator Funding, since 1982. Pat has 30-plus years of demonstrated knowledge, experience, and relationships that allow hundreds of businesses to apply and to win funding. Since 1994, Pat has facilitated $250 million in funding that has resulted in additional investments, patents, jobs, mergers and acquisitions, and new products and services for global markets. She's also the recipient of the prestigious Small Business Administration Tibbetts Award for Excellence in Programs. Welcome to the program. You also chair the Technical Leadership Institute Advisory Board at the University of Minnesota. You're a retired United States Navy commander who served over 40 years with one 10-month tour in Afghanistan supporting Operation Enduring Freedom. So welcome to We Mentor for a second conversation about funding. And I was just wondering, in 1999, you got that prestigious SBA Tibbetts Award. Can you tell us more about this award? And is it still in existence? How do people earn it?
Well, it is still in existence. And so it was, I think the Tibbetts Award started, I think, in 1995, is my guess. And so, you know, it's there to recognize organizations and people that have excelled in the SBI arena. And so, yeah, I'm fortunate enough to have been nominated and selected for a Tibbetts Award. Very proud of that award.
Nice.
And it is still in existence today, although it has gone into dormant period at times. But, you know, the SBA, collects the nominations, and then they make their decisions about who are organizations and the people that are recipients of that award.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 2001, you also won a City Business 25 Most Innovative Woman Award. Now it's called the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal. How did you feel about receiving that award?
Oh, I thought that was terrific. And, you know, I actually, you know, again, it's, you know, being a part of the high-tech ecosystem and being recognized and acknowledged for the work that you do, I think is always important for people to be recognized for what they're doing. Because, you know, we don't, you know, it's like being in the military, you know, you can't get a pay raise, you know, other than when Congress says that you get a pay raise. So how else are you going to recognize your people? You know, you give them awards, you know, acknowledge what they do. And, you know, and unfortunately, fortunate for my daughter, because I was unable to be there to receive my award because I was in my annual training period with the Navy. So I actually had my daughter go and receive the award on my behalf. So that was a good experience for her.
Oh, nice. I'm sure she's very proud. What's she up to now?
She's a very busy mom with four kids.
Okay. Does she live in Minnesota?
Yeah. She only live about 10 minutes apart. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So, you're a grandmother now, huh?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Put that on my resume. Yeah. Very, very important role. Very important role.
Yeah, absolutely. You were the principal investigator of an Office of Naval Research contract for SBIR that was early on in the five-state region. And then you ended up kind of going on a tour, which was called the SWIFT Tour, the SBIR, STTR, Where Innovation Focuses on Technology. Could you tell us about those SBIR road tours and if they're still in existence now?
Okay, so this was groundbreaking back in, I don't remember what year it was, but so there was one of the program directors within the Department of Defense who I was, you know, had a good relationship with him, and he was fortunate enough to have a lot of money to spend on outreach and so forth. And so it was decided that they were going to do this bus tour, And so they were going to actually start this bus tour in Minneapolis. And this is where the relationship business comes into play. So they started the bus tour in Minneapolis, and I was fortunate enough to ask the Navy SBIR program manager for a few dollars to help support that effort. So they started in Minneapolis. So we had our little event here where there were several of the agency program managers that flew to Minneapolis. And they did their outreach sessions with us, and then they got on a bus, and then they went up to North Dakota, then they went to South Dakota, and then they went over to Wisconsin. And so this was groundbreaking. I don't remember what year it was, but it was the first time ever that the agency program managers actually got out and did a road trip like this. Well, that led to more road trips and bus tours around the country. And now the SBA leads an effort called the SBIR road tours. And so they focus on a region of the United States. And then they have this bus tour that goes, various locations within that particular region. It's been very successful. And so for small businesses, going to a conference is not only time consuming and it's expensive. And with the road tours, it's much more affordable for small businesses to, go to Minneapolis or go to Madison or go to, Des Moines, Iowa or somewhere else to go meet with program managers from these different agencies. So it's really important to do that. And I'm really happy that we were the kickoff site for this thing now that has now evolved into these national road tours.
Yeah, where can they go to get information about that? If you don't know on the tip of your tongue, that's okay.
Well, I would just start with SBIR road tour. Just put that into Google.
I'll put a link. I'll put a link in for listeners because they should. Yeah, that's a great opportunity to have all the programs. So are the 11 programs represented during that tour?
Not always. Most the large agencies, so even though there's 11 federal agencies, there's probably, when you add up all the sub groups within some of these agencies, it's close to 75 or 80 different organizations that are involved in the SBIR and SBTR program. So it gets pretty interesting. And that's when, these road tours are helpful. Just making connections or creating awareness. But, there's a whole nother level of activity that has to happen, in navigating the federal R&D grant and contract environment. One thing that we haven't talked about is, the total amount of funding is $4 billion a year. That's what it's set aside for SBIR and SBTR. So since 1982, it's probably been $50 billion, because it's a percentage of whatever the extramural R&D budget is. So add up, I just say it's $50 billion since 1982 that's been awarded to small businesses all across this country. And this funding is really, it's been instrumental in companies like Qualcomm, the company that developed this Sonic Care toothbrush, the Roomba, and then there's, medical technologies, biotech, there's all sorts of, outcomes that derive from this R&D efforts. And there's been, just here in Minnesota, we've had about 400 plus companies win about $888 million in funding. But when you break it out to, there's been, and there's startup and existing companies. So there's always startup. Everybody always thinks it's for the startup. It's not. We go all the way up to 500 employees.
Yeah.
If it makes business sense for the company. But it's, you know, these companies have gone from the seed stage to an IPO, a seed stage to a merger or acquisition, a seed stage to a small business in our local communities, or an existing small business that needs to change because global competition has impacted their markets and their market share. So they need to pivot. They need, and so they really, this one company that I'm thinking about in St. Paul, mom and dad started the company on the kitchen table 50 plus years ago. They had a thriving business for many years, and then global competition started impacting their market share, and they recognized that they couldn't continue on the path they were on. So they had to innovate in order to be competitive. And now today they make products that are actually being used on satellites in space, which is a totally different market space than what they were for many years. So this is where I get excited about what SBIR means to a company.
Yeah.
Whether it's startup or an existing. And then of course we got the graveyard, companies that, didn't make it past, just didn't get past the goal. And you'll have that. And then we've got companies that are, that had a lot of SBIR funding in there in the beginning, maybe $20, $30, $40 million worth of funding. And then now they're publicly held. And the last time I checked, there's like three companies that are on that list, and they have close to $1 billion in market capitalization.
Hmm.
So this is where,
this is serious money.
Of course it is. Another company that, they've been at it since the 90s. They were an existing company, got involved in SBIR. They've got 100 plus employees. They routinely, write and, proposals and get funding, do their research and development. But then the other component of SBIR that is really important for companies to know is that if you win, let's say a phase one, and maybe you don't go on to phase two, which is fine, but that's, you really want to go on to phase two where there's more money. But then if you develop a product or service that you can tie back to that phase one, and now the government wants to buy it, they can buy it on a sole source basis. They don't have to recompete it because it was already competed in phase one or phase two. And there's a company that worked with that, secured a $60 million indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity type of contract as a result of their SBIR phase one with the Federal Aviation Administration. So this is the opportunity that is, yes, there to support the R&D, but it's also there to support commercialization, either in the commercial markets or in the federal procurement arena.
So
and the funding levels, you asked a question earlier about the funding levels.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So we can go from 50,000 all the way up to maybe 700,000, depending upon the group. And this is what makes it so hard to explain the programs these days, because it's like, well, which group are you talking about? Which phase? Because sometimes, we have to start out at phase one, but maybe we can start out at phase two, depending upon the agency. And then the funding levels, are different. $50,000 with the Air Force has a $50,000 phase one, which, they're really looking for commercial companies that have a novel solution or novel technology that is applicable to the Air Force. And the $50,000, doesn't come along with a lot of the bureaucracy that other federal grants or contracts do. So this is where, again, we have to think, what's the project and who cares about it? Who's got funding at the federal level to support that project? And there might be two, three agencies that might have an interest in what you're doing. So this is where then we start talking about the strategy behind, getting that project funded, or maybe you have 2-3 different projects that you want to pursue, but, you know, and then which agencies care. And then, of course, going through the process of actually preparing and getting the application submitted. I mean, this last week, we had a major closing date with the National Institutes of Health. We had, there's maybe seven projects go in. And I think all total, it was about $7 or $8 million worth of funding requests made by those companies. Mm-hmm. And one project itself was $2.7 million, and it had Health Partners as a collaborator, and a researcher from Harvard University, and another small business here in Minnesota. So that was a big deal, you know, for that company. And that project had been in the works for almost 9 months to get mm-hmm. that, because it involves a clinical trial, and
yeah,
you know, that's always challenging. So, you know, we're always looking for those novel, innovative projects across the spectrum of science, technology, engineering, and manufacturing. And then we decide, well, who cares at the federal level? Because, you know, I always refer to the agencies as children, because they each have their own personality and their own way of doing business. And so we have to be very focused about who we're targeting, and is this a good project for them? And of course, have conversations with them. You know, really be methodical and strategic in everything that we do, so that we're moving down this pathway, high quality submission. And that's really at the end of the day with the accelerator. To help qualifying companies with qualifying projects to prepare and submit proposals to the agency or agencies that are applicable to them. And it isn't just all about the science. It's about the business. It's the market. It's the financing strategy. It's the revenue model, because some of these projects require that kind of information. So I always say it's a marriage of science, business, markets, and customers.
Yeah.
And you got to have customers. You may not have, you know, potential customers going into a phase one or maybe a phase two proposal. But we always start with what's the end, you know, at the end in mind. You know, what are we trying to commercialize?
Right.
How, you know, we're trying to create something, a novel product or service that's going to generate revenues for us. Oh, but oh my gosh, I got to get through R&D. That's going to take 3-4 years or maybe a couple $1 million to do that. I don't have that in my bank account. Where am I going to go get that?
Yeah.
Investors? Well, no, we're too early for them. So this is where this source of funding is just really critical, and it's not easy to get. And maybe some people say, oh, Pat, you shouldn't be so direct like that. And I said, well, you're going to spend a lot of time on something that isn't going to generate the results that you want. So I'd rather have people walk in with their both eyes open, understand what they're getting into, and if they're willing to put the time and effort into learning how to do this, because the first one is always the hardest. You're on a learning curve, or like we say in the military, you're flying an airplane as you're building it. So, you know, it's really stepping into this arena. And if you don't win on the first time, it happens all the time. You're not alone. You're in good company, but you stick with it. You know, years ago, I used to give out this award. I call it the Dillon Persistence Award. Because I would always give it out to the company that, you know, stuck with it. And eventually we got funded. And if I don't think somebody's, their company's a good candidate, I'm going to tell them that. You're not a good candidate. This is what you're going to have to do in order to become a better candidate.
Yeah, that's really constructive. How many companies on average do you work with per year?
Oh, it's over 100.
Yeah, okay. And what is the process that you go through? Like, do they submit to you? How do they interact with you?
Well, typically what I have them do now, and I'm following the process that the National Science Foundation uses. So we ask people to apply to the accelerator. And what does that mean? That means you have to answer five questions. And those five questions, four of them mimic what the National Science Foundation requires of companies. And I thought, well, if it works for NSF, it will work for me. So those five questions are this. Number one is, what's the technical innovation?
Okay.
Number two is, what are the technical challenges? And then three, what's the market opportunity? And then the fourth one is, tell us about your company and team, internally, externally. And then the fifth one has to do with scientific and technical literature that supports the innovation. And so this is where, so those first four questions are what NSF asks. I added the fifth one because any of these applications, proposals that go into a federal agency have citations.
Yeah.
These are scholarly documents. And so you have to have the technical and scientific and technical literature to support what you're doing. And it's really, it's not all-inclusive at the time that they submit their application. But, it's kind of a, like, okay, do you have some data to show that there's some validity to what you're proposing? And, the other thing about the questions, and I also have a self-assessment that, I've created, and, just to get people to sort of get their mind wrapped around what this is all about, because it is, money, but it's probably most times it's not the right color of money that people need. And that we're in this S&T and R&D early stage kind of, work. And it's not always a good fit for some companies. So we want to make sure that if they apply to the accelerator, if they take the time and they really think through those questions, it's going to help them as a business, number one. But then when I read it, I say, I know what these agencies are looking for. And I'll say, this is ready to go to the National Science Foundation because they're a potential funding source to you. And oh, by the way, you need an invitation from them to actually submit a full proposal. So if you get the invitation from the National Science Foundation, then you're automatically in the accelerator. But the other agencies don't require that invitation, but we still have them. We still engage with those agencies to make sure that the project is a good fit.
And how do you keep track of all the businesses? Like, once they get the funding, then what is your relationship with them afterward?
Oh, I have long-term relationships with these companies. I jokingly say this, but, it's like it's Hotel California. Once you're in the accelerator, you can't leave. So this is the world of federal R&D is complicated and it's complex. There's lots of rules and regs and requirements. And I am not the owner of all this information. I mean, this is where the relationships piece comes into play. There's existing companies here in Minnesota that have probably gone through it already, and I can always reach out to them. Everybody's always so helpful. Or I have relationships at the federal level, and if I don't know the answer to something, which, routinely does happen, I ask the people at the federal level.
Yeah.
And a prime example of this happened just last week. A company that submitted their pitch to NSF, they were invited to submit a proposal, and then they were notified by a multi-billion-dollar company that was not happy about how they named their company because they thought it sort of infringed on their company name.
Oh.
So, of course, they reach out to me and they say, well, do we have to go get another project pitch? So I said, I don't know the answer to that question. But let me ask the program manager that I work with routinely at NSF and just ask the question. I'll do it anonymously. That's the value. I'll do it anonymously. I'll just say, I have a client. And I do this a lot. And so, and he respects me. And so he responds back and provides me with an answer. And then I just forward it on to the client. So this is a pivotal role that, you know, we play, you know, before an award, you know, even after an award. You know, it's like things are constantly changing at the federal level, and small businesses, you know, startups in particular, are very busy. They can't keep their eye on what's going on. And it's hard for me to just keep in touch with what's going on at the federal level. But, you know, I try to do my best and
yeah,
just try to keep people, you know, informed and be there as a resource to them. And we roll up our sleeves. We help them get to the winner's circle. And once they're there, then we support them in whatever other avenues they want.
That's the reward, right, for you doing all this work when you're in there and pulling all this information together and helping them get the funding. It's nice to know, you know, that the relationship isn't ending just right there. And I think with business ownership, having the long-term perspective in mind is always to your benefit to say, you know, what if we can, you know, really do this for a long time and this is improves people's lives in this certain way or whatever. You know, it's a long game. And so just pacing yourself as you go through the process and not thinking.
Oh, and you don't, and you don't, you're not taught. I mean, when I think about our educational system, is there a course at the University of Minnesota or any educational institution that teaches you how to go after federal R&D funding, or how to manage a federal grant, or how to manage a federal contract, or how to do cost accounting, how to do all these things that come along with getting a federal grant or a contract? I mean, I can guarantee you, I mean, there's things that make, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying not only to support startups and existing companies, acquire federal funding, but then to also be good stewards of the taxpayers' investment. And Christ, you know, there are a lot of rules and regs and requirements that come along with getting a federal grant or a contract. And most often these companies are being led by scientists or engineers or maybe people in the business world, but they didn't have any expertise when it came to federal research or federal grants and contracts. So there's like this whole body of, you know, expertise that you need, or at least have access to people that know enough to be dangerous in my case.
So who's the oversight for, you know, does each state SBIR/STTR programs, are they all doing, you know, working with 100 companies a year, or is it different per state? And who oversees all that? Like, do you have a review process or? Yeah.
Well, the Small Business Administration in Washington, which administers we get our federal funding from, which is called the Federal and State Technology Partnership Program. So it requires, so there's this pot of money that Congress sets aside. And of course, the SBA administers it. They solicit proposals, they do their reviews, and then they make their awards. And so, and any applicant, like any fast applicant, needs to have the governor's endorsement. And so we've had this endorsement for 8 years. We've gotten consecutively funded for 8 years. And, you know, going into another year here, hopefully, you know, starting this fall. But every state is different in how they administer their SBIR support. And some states have multiple offices, some states only have one office, or they might have a team of people, they might be at a university, they might, you know, there's a whole mix of different organizations that provide this SBIR assistance. But there aren't that many that have someone that's got 30 years.
Knows the system like you do.
Well, right. We all come to the table with our own gifts and expertise and so forth. So I just have a long history. I just made a decision early on in my career that, you know, this really makes a difference. And I could have made more money someplace else doing something else, probably had a little less stress and so forth. But I know at the end of the day that this makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And that is, you know, like I said earlier about, you know, aligning with my core values and supporting the underdog. Because back in the 90s, entrepreneurship, it was like a dirty word. It was the redheaded stepchild, in my estimation. But fast forward now, it's like entrepreneurship is everywhere. And I always think about federal programs. New federal programs are akin to like the new product life cycle. You have the early adopters.
Yeah.
And so we had those early adopters for many years. And then, you know, with each time that the SBIR program was reauthorized and there was this trend that was occurring nationally. And I always said, and I wish I would have wrote a white paper on this, but I said back in the early 2000s, I said the 21st century is going to be the century of the entrepreneur. What good does that get me? But anyway, it's just this trend that I saw happening. And then that's, you know, counterintuitive to me when the Kauffman Foundation says that, you know, startups are way down. And I'm like, okay, this, you know, and there's other reports too. It isn't just the Kauffman Foundation. I mean, when you start to look at the national data, you know, it's not what it should be. So I'm trying to reconcile that in my head when we've got more attention and more focus on entrepreneurship now than I think we've ever had, and yet the numbers are down. I don't understand it, but you know, there are other people that study that more than I do.
Yeah,
but it is a.
So I just,
I mean,
have a
we
couple
are
of,
a nation.
Yeah, go ahead.
We are a nation of entrepreneurs. We are, and going back to the early colonial days, they had to be entrepreneurial. They had to. They didn't have a choice. So I think it's just in our DNA. It's just in our blood, you know, that this is why this country, you know, has such a successful SBIR program. I mean, it was the first. It was the first. And there are like 12 other countries that try to mimic the USBIR program. Well, you must be doing something right if they all want to mimic it.
Right. We mentor. So I have a couple of questions left. How are Launch Minnesota Innovations grants connected to SBIR, STR?
Well, we've been around longer than Launch Minnesota. So the Launch Minnesota grants are available to any company. The business operations grant is available to any company up to $1 million in revenues or something. You know, they've got some eligibility criteria that you have to meet. And it's, you know, more focused on science and technology based companies. And then the matching program, the SBIR, STR matching grants, well, those are only available for first time phase one or phase two awardees. And so, this question has come up before. We are the engine before you get to an SBIR, STTR phase one or phase two award. And we're part of your activities during that award and after that award. So whereas the grant, the Launch Minnesota grant, is very helpful to support expenses that a company incurs, that is not allowable as a federal cost. So this is where the matching program is really important for those companies. Plus, you know, for a lot of, you know, when we compare Minnesota resources with other resources of other states, you know, there's other states that offer matching program for their SBIR and STTR awardees.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's with Launch Minnesota is because the state has to manage those dollars. You know, we're there to, you know, get them to the winner's circle, and then they can take advantage of that. But, you know, we're with them for a long time. We have long-term relationships with people, with the companies.
Yeah, that's what makes it so rewarding for everybody. And, you know, on the path that's unpredictable, it's good to have, you know, partners that you can count on to help you, you know, process and work through all the different setbacks along the way and overcome some roadblocks, huge ones.
Or open up doors for the future. It's always about roadblocks or challenges. You know, I mean, yeah, those things happen and they certainly do, but it's like, you got to be resilient. You got to pivot, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Good. Well, what are you aspiring to towards this year and next?
Well, securing our funding through the SBA. And
you have to do that
for many years, yes. And then last year was a multi-year award. But, you know, there's always, I never take anything for granted.
Mm, wow.
I never take it for granted. And, you know, there's some things happening within Congress and, you know, that impacts the future of SBIR. So we'll see how that flushes out. Hopefully they'll find a way to extend the program beyond September 30th, which is something that they have to do. You know, and then maybe next year, you know, work towards, you know, getting legislation introduced to actually make the program permanent. You know, and well, I think 40 years of a demonstrated impact.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's one company. I mean, I'll just throw this little tidbit. So Qualcomm, which is this multi-billion-dollar company, received SBIR fund back in the 90s from the Department of Defense and from the National Science Foundation. What they were working on were these blue chips and novel chips, and there was no investor that was going to put money into that company at that point. It was too technically risky.
Yeah.
But here's this SBIR program, so they got, I think, $12 million of SBIR funding. That, just that one company, and it's, you know, market cap of, I don't know, $12 billion. I don't know. I'm not even sure what the dollar amount is. But that has pretty much paid for the whole program.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is where, and it takes many years for some of these things to evolve and change. And the other component of this, and this is where I sort of get on my, not my little soapbox, but as a nation, we invest in our citizenry through education. And so we either bachelor's, master's, PhD. And then, you know, the career pathway, it used to be, you know, if you got a PhD, you were just going to teach and research at a university. That was your pathway. Today, that pathway now extends to entrepreneurship. And we see it happening, you know, now with different programs that are coming out of the agencies, because as a nation, we want to invest in those bright minds that are going to have an impact on our economy long term. And and so we just need to, you know, make those investments now, because 20 years from now, these are going to hopefully be the big companies of the future. But we have to make that investment now, not, you know, and we've been doing it in SBIR since 1982, making those investments into that economy that we want for the future, because it takes that long. You know, the life cycle for some of these technologies to get from the lab to the marketplace can be 10, 15 years.
Yeah, so we definitely need to support the infrastructure, and you've really helped us kind of understand the taxpayer investments and how we can support technology innovations and Minnesota companies, and why you're such a treasure trove in Minnesota for innovators in science and technology and investment and understanding and bringing products and services to the commercialization level. so that they can, you know, develop into the Qualcomms of the world or, you know, whatever their aspirations are. But you work with a diverse portfolio of startups and existing companies, and it's good to know, you know, where to access funding. And you're very knowledgeable, and I'm sure you're going to get a lot of calls. So I'll look forward to future conversations together at some point.
Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, for any of the listeners, I mean, I always say this, it's like you send all this money to Washington. What do you do to get it back? You write really good research proposals that get funded. That's how you get it back to Minnesota. And it's making that decision. It's like, okay, are we the kind of company that's going to be a good fit for this? Are we going to invest the time and energy to learn how to do this? Because this is not easy.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, the opportunity is there. And
you might as well see where you can take it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been excellent. I just really appreciate you taking the time away from the 100 companies that you're working with to talk with us today and kind of plant the seeds for the next group of 100 companies that you work with in the future.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, Nancy. It's, as you can tell, yeah, I like talking about it.
And we benefit from it. And thanks, Mike Cavea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And we'll see you all. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all next week. Please always give us feedback. I really like to know if it's helping you. And if there's other questions you have, make sure that you send an email to nancy@wementor.com and I'll get you the resources and answers you need and further programming if you've got those ideas as well. All right. So we'll see you next week. Bye.
Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.